Hold on, I think I know what the
there
issue
we got
is.
It. That's there better. You are.
Okay, even Charlie's upset about this turn of events. Okay, calling to order the council meeting for August 5th. Jan, can you take roll call?
Yes, Jason Hartman?
Here.
David Lindley?
Here.
Ashley Post?
Here.
Jim Rensier?
Here.
Joe Turkowitz?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Okay. Jan, are there any public comments that were received by 5 o'clock today?
There were no public comments received.
Okay, then we will jump into business items. Item one is the mayor's update, and I felt like since I was out for July after our son was born, little Charlie, that it would be appropriate to give you guys some updates on some of the items that we see addressing in the near future. And that have been talked about recently. So primary or key on that list, obviously, is COVID-19 and just the ongoing impacts that we're experiencing here on the city level. This probably is not new to you, but obviously it's clear based on data and directives from the state level that we'll be operating under kind of some COVID-19 influence systems for the foreseeable future. I think I just want to reiterate primarily that we do approach this as a public health crisis. We are continuing to follow the data, the science, and the guidance of our county and state health departments, as well as the governor's orders. And I think specific to the city, well, that does include continuing to enforce directives to the best of our ability. And I know this has been a topic of conversation in the past, but when it comes to that enforcement, that does fall to our city police department. For the council, we were originally planning to have a more in-depth discussion focusing on some of the long-term planning related to COVID-19 at this meeting, but we are moving that to August 19th. Primarily, that'll include consideration of proposals of how we can use our available CARES funds, and a presentation as well as Q&A for each of you with our County Public Health Director, Aaron Quinn. I'm not sure if everyone is aware, but in recent weeks, the approach that we have been taking at the county level for COVID-19 cases and the ongoing oversight is switching from being primarily through a joint EOC command to a split between the EOC and County Health Department. Both are still involved, but I think it's important for the council and White Salmon to understand how that's changing or going to influence the approach going forward. A big part of this too, I think, is starting to look more fully at long-term ways that we can continue to support our community and also adapt city operations to serve the community. A big part of that is looking at how the economic impacts are gonna affect us long-term. And there's some interesting statistics that have come out from our economic development committee at the county level. Sorry, Charlie is not that happy, that I wanted to share with you on this note because I think it's interesting to keep in mind for this meeting in 2 weeks. In the past 3 months, residents of Klickitat County have received over $10 million in benefits. That's roughly 3 to 4% of total income during those months. The majority, 64% of those benefits, have come from the Federal Pandemic Unemployment Compensation Program. That is the one that did lapse last week. The county has also lost 980 jobs over the past 12 months, a decline of 15%. Manufacturing has continued to have the biggest decline. We've lost 340 jobs collectively. Leisure and hospitality has dropped by 170 jobs, and government, primarily those positions in K-12 education, have lost 140 jobs. On the other side of that, combined, 22 businesses here in White Salmon specifically have received grants through two programs that our county instituted. One was the Working Washington Small Business Emergency Grant Program, as well as the second round of funding that the city participated in that process as well, the Klickitat County Small Business Emergency Grant. But it's clear, I think, from all of these numbers that on as terms of our roles, trying to get out in front of anticipating long-term effects of this pandemic, both on the health side of things, but also on our economy, is going to be pretty critical. The housing moratorium, I think without question, our ability to move on the issues that we identified as part of our housing moratorium was definitely handicapped by restrictions implemented on city meetings at the start of the pandemic. I do believe that letting that standing moratorium expire was the appropriate way forward. It did expire this past month, which all of you are aware. We were able to pass that MH zone change, but I think that letting that expiration happen also took into account appropriately the restrictions on in-person meetings that are still in place and our uncertainty about when those will be lifted. Especially in this area, I think this showed very clearly our job as leaders to be able to adapt and adjust to situations when things don't go as planned. The ideal scenario that certainly I was passionate about at the start of that moratorium was to have a dedicated 6-month window to work on real changes to our city code as it relates to land use and zoning, as well as council-led policy decisions on ADUs, short-term rentals, administrative review of permit processes, and building stronger partnerships with local housing-focused organizations and developers. The motivation behind all of that work was to build a better, more equitable system to encourage diverse and affordable housing. We don't have that ideal scenario anymore, but what we do have, I think, and what we saw throughout that process was a community that's been vocal in supporting this work. I think we owe it to them to continue making this a focus this year and moving as many of these items forward that we can. I think we especially owe it to many of our long-term residents who did speak at that last public hearing regarding the mobile home zone, many of whom have since had to move from that Washington Street development. And again, some numbers behind why I think this issue is important and putting it into context. The data from our own urbanization study reinforced the importance of making headway on this issue. In 2019, the median home price in White Salmon was $454,000. That's a 6% increase from the year prior. Meanwhile, the median household income in 2017, which is the last year we had on record, for White Salmon was just over $47,000. So that's a very significant gap. There's not one answer to that problem, but I do think it speaks to keeping this issue a key focus for the council. And lastly, I think budget is something that's been talked about and has been a focus. Normally in a given year, we would have already had a councilor retreat. That's the time for the councilors to really give some direction to the administration and city staff on where you want to see money reinforcing the priorities that you have. We are still planning to have a retreat that will happen, obviously, in a virtual role. We're looking at some September dates, and I think we'll have that to you guys in the near future. I think that important part of that workshop is also reviewing progress and where we stand on what the council had stated last year is focus areas for 2020. Some of that included council and mayor roles, inclusivity, infrastructure, housing, and economic development. And lastly, on the topic of budget, there is an annual budget conference that AWC holds every August. That's still happening. It's actually scheduled for August 20th. It will be all virtual, but you can also do it on demand. So if that date doesn't work for you, I highly encourage all of you to register because it gives you those sessions and tools at your disposal when it's convenient. And I think it'll help all of us have more informed discussions and really put in work on a budget this year that's reflecting some of the community's desires, but also we have new counselors this year, what your focus is. I know this year has been extraordinary in ways that aren't necessarily all positive. And I want to reinforce for you guys that it's really you that set the direction of where we want to take this city on a policy side of things. And that is important. And even though our meetings and process has been affected greatly by COVID-19, I don't think that means we think of 2020 as a year lost. I think it's been some good learning opportunities and some new issues have come to the forefront. And I hope that we can, as best we can, facilitate the discussions that you guys want to have going forward. With that, I open it up for any questions. I know I could have given all these updates at the end of the meeting, but I feel like at that time, everyone's a little bit drained. And I figured some of these topics, there might be some questions you guys have, and we could have the discussion at the top of the meeting instead of waiting until the end. And I think I finally have a quiet baby, so it's easier to hear.
So just as a comment for anyone that wants to attend, sign up for the budget sessions, just send me an email. Let me know if you want to attend the virtual session on 8/20 or if you want the sessions on demand and I'll get you signed up.
Just a quick question. You referenced the urbanization.
Yeah,
you referenced the urbanization study. Is that available now?
It was in draft form. That's what the Planning Commission reviewed at their June meeting. Okay. I know.
It is in
Jan,
final.
I don't know if you can give an update.
Yeah, it is in final format. It's been finalized, and I will I'm getting ready to put that on the website. And when I get it up on the website, I'll send you guys all the link.
Okay, thank you.
And just as a point, I believe it's only the white salmon portion that's finalized. They're working on a bigger Klickitat County project also.
Any other comments or questions?
So, Marla, just to recap, you were saying that at our next meeting, you'd like to hear some ideas that us counselors have for helping our community through the effects of COVID, and that we'll also have a Q&A with Erin from EOC.
Yes, so Erin will be coming. Erin actually was just appointed or seated in that position earlier this spring in the middle of COVID-19 kind of unfolding in terms of how the state and county was responding to it. So I think it's also a good opportunity for all of you to meet and connect with her, but primarily she'll focus on how she's directing the health department, since it is a public health crisis, and their approach going forward. Recently, there has been some changes to how the county is handling that approach between the Emergency Operations Center, that joint task force we were all aware of, and now the health department under Erin Quinn. In terms of the suggestions that I mentioned from council, so that you guys can make some informed decisions and come up with some ideas. What we're hoping to do in advance of that meeting is give you guys a deeper dive on how CARES funding can actually be used. There's a variety of ways, and it spans everything from, you know, mitigation of an outbreak actually occurring in our community, or ways to be preventative on that front, to economic support. Some of that is targeted also to not just businesses, but residents. Potentially rent and mortgage assistance. We are currently working with the county in a consortium for some CARES funding that is targeted only at rent and mortgage assistance. So the goal for you guys would be to understand the areas that CARES funding can go, some suggestions that the city staff will bring forward that we've been working on of different areas where we could use that funding to assist. But that's a starting point for you guys. If you have other ideas, or in the meantime want to look into what other cities are doing on this front, I think that would probably be helpful for you guys to kind of have an informed discussion at that time.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Is it too soon to know what impacts just the economy has done to tax revenue? Is that part of budgeting?
It is, and Jan can best answer that. There is some delay when numbers come in, and we're just now starting to see numbers from the spring.
So I am tracking that, Jim, but when people pay their taxes to the state, i.e. You typically pay your May taxes in June, we don't see that June information until August. So it's like a 2-month delay. And initially when the quarterly taxes were due earlier this spring, the governor delayed those until like mid-June. So there's quite a bit of taxes out there that have been delayed for a number of reasons. And we'll probably start to see those, as I said, in August. And so then I don't see those until the very last day of August. They send me, you know, their report so that I can post those taxes on the last day of August. So in actuality, I wouldn't be able to report to you until September. So at that, you know, that workshop that we have sometime in September, I should have better numbers. But I am tracking just the day-to-day things. We had already anticipated that sales taxes would be down this year, because of slowdown in construction work, we anticipated just a normal slowdown that kind of started to appear to be happening in late 2019. We anticipated it in 2020, so I had already reduced sales tax revenue for this year. But we certainly are going to see, some reductions because the restaurants were closed for a while, then they only were doing, takeout. They're still limited in what they can do. And we actually have some businesses, Tarwater, our bar is completely closed and has not been able to reopen. And it doesn't sound like that's going to happen anytime soon. So that's one business that's like been hammered.
Thank you.
Okay, seeing no other questions, we'll move on to item two, the Spoke Bike Park Agreement Modification.
So,
Jan or Ken, do you want to introduce this item?
So initially, you guys approved an agreement, and you actually have the full agreement there. When we sent that agreement over to Scott to sign, he had some concerns with the indemnification clauses, specifically the last sentence in section 2 and all of section 7. He did sign the agreement, but he crossed those two sections out and initialed them. He did sign this after Marla had already signed it, so Marla signed it in full. And so Scott is asking the council to consider the removal of those two sections. He has stated that his concerns is that he feels those sections put all of the liability on him, basically personally, because there is no official organization. He's just really doing this as a volunteer and his love for, the bike park. He has stated that he's got volunteers, $30,000 in funding and clean soil, and is ready to go when we tell him so.
So my spin on this is that those are pretty substantive changes to the agreement that you approved. The first one basically says that he will not allow hazardous materials to be used on the property. The second one is a general indemnification against damages and injuries resulting from his use of the property that wouldn't include others' use of the property, like users of the bike park. That's a substantive change. It's not something I would normally approve as an acceptable change. But I would say that if the council wanted to go ahead with it in this form, my approval would be based upon a review by our insurance risk manager that this would be covered, that any losses in this instance would be covered by our insurance. If the insurance company says yes, then I could approve this with those changes, but otherwise, no, because you see the problem we have is we're protected under the Recreational Immunity Act, that's 42.24.210, that says end users of that park, provided they're not charged a fee, cannot proceed against the city if they're injured while using the park. And that's true of basically all open lands and parks that the city owns that you don't charge a fee for. But that would not cover activities that we voluntarily allow on the property for, say, construction activities. That's not part of recreational immunity. And if someone were to be injured while, even as volunteers, while they're performing the construction activities, the city would be on the hook, even though we have absolutely no control over how they're doing their construction activities, safety issues, use of equipment. That's my concern. And if the insurance company says, well, whatever, go ahead, or if they say, yeah, we have a release form that the volunteers could sign that would allow the city to proceed without risk of liability, then I would say, yeah, I mean, again, this is a substantive change. It's not one I would normally make because of the potential risks to the city. But if the insurance company has another way around it, I'd say, great, council can approve it, and I would sign it. But this is a pretty big change for the reasons I outlined.
I have a question. So Ken, is there verbiage, and I know we'd have to reach back out to Scott, but is there verbiage that we could put into the contract that's essentially said volunteers assume their own liability and risk or something to that?
The problem is the volunteers haven't signed the agreement. So that's why I'd say let's look to what the insurance company potentially has for some sort of a release form that they would feel would protect us through them. Because again, they're third parties to an agreement between the city and this individual or the Spoke Park. And so they would not be precluded from proceeding against us or them.
Got it. Okay.
Seeing Joe's hand and Ash's hand.
In an alternative, like if that didn't work, could we ask that the Spoke Club, whatever, however they're organized, to obtain insurance policy that also covers the city?
That would work, but for the fact that they're not formally organized, and no insurance company to touch them for that reason. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that'd be great. And that's how it was originally set up, Joe, back in the eons ago when this was first done. They were going to be formally organized and insured by IMBA. That was all part of the discussion and negotiations in the first place. But that went by the by. And we're still trying to find, and it's a situation where we have people who are willing to donate time and money.
Right.
But the problem we have is what potential exposure could this lead to? And it's not an unreasonable notion to think it could lead to exposure, especially when the city doesn't have any control over those activities.
So in what you stated earlier, if we all choose to go forward with that pending the insurance review, is it that is as simple as that?
Yeah, I'd say the council could approve it tonight if they were so inclined, subject to the insurance company either providing coverage or are obtaining the requisite waivers that they'd look for.
Okay. Thanks.
Yes, Ashley.
So just trying to understand a little bit better. So that RCW 424-210 wouldn't apply to Spoke Park because there's equipment involved that we've approved?
It's because they're not recreational users. They're doing construction activities on the property, not recreational activities. And RCW 424-210 is specific to those who are using the property for recreational purposes.
Okay.
So basically the construction. Correct. The sticking issue at this point is really about right now what is wanting to be done, improvements to that park and the work that's going to happen during that, or any future improvements or different construction that may occur. It's not the actual use of the park by any right. recreators or members of the public. That's where that state law protects us. But it's trying to figure out, could we just ask for a release form similar to what Jason said to meet that need from the city's tight sense of needing further clarification on protecting the city. But, you know, obviously making sure too that we're not putting more on any individual that's trying to do something out of goodwill. And in that sense, Joe, back to your question or statement, you know, there's not really an organization that's behind this improvement at this point. It's really an individual. So it's not appropriate. We can't enter into what would have been a more formal agreement between the city and an actual entity.
And so let's say the city was building the park, would we have to control, or the company doing the work would have their own insurance, and that kind of thing, right?
Right. And we'd be subject to prevailing wages, and we would, you know, we would have insurance on that, those activities, because it was under our control.
What if it was a group of volunteers, but also under our control?
Then we couldn't do it because we'd be subject to prevailing. So this, if it's under our control, then we can't contract with volunteers and control them. We can contract with an organization under 35.21.278 and provide funds for them to do the work, but the work has to be done by that organization and not by the city. So if it's done by the city, then it's prevailing wages.
No, I understand. I'm just saying, I was wondering if there was a way to structure it so it would automatically fall under our insurance, such that as if these volunteers were volunteering for the city. And in that case, would the waiver or what would that look like?
Well, that goes to the first prong of my way to let this go forward, and that is, see if the insurance company will tell us that they would provide coverage for these activities, you know, anyway, with the agreement as it now stands, with their interlineation, would they provide coverage if somebody's injured while doing that work for this project? And if the answer is yes, I kind of, my heartburn goes away a little bit. So I don't want to put us in a position where there's a loss. We turn it over to the insurance company, which is the first thing we always do, and they say, you're not covered.
Right.
You're totally exposed.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't done my job because there I've allowed the city to be in a position where it could have substantial exposure.
Sure. Well, it seems like he has a professional excavating company lined up to work with him, who I presume has insurance. So I guess I'm just wondering if we could leverage that somehow, and maybe it's with a waiver or with our, you know. So, yeah, understood. Thank you for the clarification.
Sure.
Any other questions or comments?
So,
David?
David's raising his hand.
Yeah, I guess I would just say my preference is that the insurance provides a suitable release form. I guess I have a little bit of heartburn, even if the volunteers are covered under our policy, just because we have no supervision of these activities and there's heavy equipment involved and things happen. So I don't know.
You've hit the nail on the head, David. That's exactly what I would lose sleep over. Exactly.
Right. Yeah. So, some the caution there. And then I guess I was wondering if there is a suitable release form, does that get rolled into this language such that licensee will make everyone sign that? And I guess I say that knowing it doesn't have much teeth since this is a non-entity signing this agreement with the city.
Right. We could add a sentence that says licensee will require all participants, all volunteer participants, to provide to the city a good and sufficient waiver and release before proceeding with work. Did you get that, Jan? That's the language we want.
Thank you.
Send it to me by email before you.
Oh no, I don't. I have to think it up again. We'll have to review it.
I can listen to the tape. Just as a comment, I've worked with RMSA for a number of years. At the minimum, they will require, you know, hold harmless indemnification signature. Anytime you have volunteers work on city property, and this is city property, they require that at a minimum. And so we'll touch base with it. The other thing is, like, typically when you use volunteers, again, you could contract with an organization, a formal organization, and or, you know, the city contracts with a contractor for a project, realizing that a significant portion of that project is going to be done by volunteers. And again, you have these hold harmless and release statements that volunteers signed. We did that with the playground down in Bingen when that was built. We had a lot of volunteers on that project. The other thing that RMSA may want, if they do cover us, or do cover the improvements and the construction work that's going on down there, is they will likely want to see a stamped engineering drawing of the project that shows that it's been fully engineered by someone certified to do that.
And probably with as-builts.
Well, we should always have as-builts, but they definitely will want to see the drawings with an engineer stamp on it. I can't say that for 100%, but most likely they're going to say you need to have, you know, something professionally done up. And I know it's by a professional.
I guess the action the council could take tonight, if they're so inclined, would be to approve the modification to the bike park agreement, subject to additional language requiring volunteer waivers and insurance review. And it looks like Joe's got his hand up.
Joe, do you have a question?
Yeah, sorry to circle back on this, but I had a question about the hazardous waste.
Yeah.
So in reading that, the way I read it is that he personally will not allow anybody to put that on there. So I want to clarify, like, if somebody backs up down the hill and dumps mattresses and a couple of appliances down there, does that put that on him to remove that, or how does that play in?
Well, that's not the kind of hazardous waste we're talking about. It's under CERCLA, but it does present an issue if they were to bring in chainsaws that are gasoline powered, motor oil, things like that that are related to the project itself. I'd be interested to see what the insurance company would allow for a modification of that particular line, because it is almost overbroad to say they won't allow hazardous materials, because again, petroleum products are technically hazardous materials.
Yeah, pressure-treated lumber too.
Pressure-treated lumber, and they probably are going to want to use that, but there are allowable uses of certain types of hazardous materials within the law. And the question is, I don't want to turn this into a 20-page agreement with too much elaboration. And maybe if the insurance company would, allow that to stand as stricken, I don't know that I would worry that much about it. It's not as if, they're putting, a underground storage tank on the property or something. I think any loss could be very easily contained in the normal circumstance with this type of construction.
Right.
Some of that language may have come from the SEPA review. This property is adjacent to Jewett Creek.
Good point.
And so it's the project area is outside of the required buffer zone for Jewett Creek, so it's not within the buffer zone. But there were still some requirements. There were minor requirements as part of that SEPA determination. It was a mitigated determination of non-significance. So
maybe that language could be changed, instead of saying as defined under, just to add except as allowed under state and federal law, because there are for those kinds of hazardous materials, there are a lot of exceptions for construction activities and containment and those sorts of things that allow people to actually do that kind of work. David, you probably know something about that yourself.
Yeah, I was just shaking my head a little bit because that's the only thing I was worried about. It is the excavator blows a hose, which happens more common than you would think, which, you know, they're a very easy means to contain and to deal with. But where is that language? Who takes care of it? So maybe that's maybe in the CEPA. I don't know.
Maybe just adding except as allowed under state and federal law, something like that. That makes it fairly simple.
Ashley.
I was just wondering if Scott Hulbert could be invited back into this follow-up conversation. And the reason that I ask is because a bike track very similar to this is just finished in Hood River just this summer. And that was all by volunteers, and they had to go through a whole process to get it approved by the Hood River County. And I believe that was also headed up by Scott Hulbert. And so I wonder if he might have any insight on how they got that all approved. It's close to the high school, the Hood River High School.
And that might be a good idea, Ashley, but it is important to remember two different states, two different entities, two different insurance companies. Mm-hmm. And so it's sometimes hard to forget that there is this boundary line because it's sort of invisible.
Sure. I just wonder if there might be any crossover, if there might have been any similar issues coming up.
I do think it's worth keeping in mind in this discussion that this has become a prolonged process than what we all anticipated when he first came before the council prior to COVID-19. And we acknowledged that a CEPA review was needed. Then that CEPA review experienced some delay from COVID-19, and it experienced another delay getting back onto the agendas because of the mandate from the state level about only critical issues. So while I do think, as Ken outlined, there is this critical thing that is missing in this current agreement specific to when work is occurring in a construction form to make improvements to this park that is on city land, where does responsibility lie? And some of that is also being mindful that we're trying to protect the individual doing this good deed as well, so that they aren't catching themselves in an unfortunate situation. But I would just hope that we don't go down a path of another month or a prolonged process. If we need to get some feedback from RMSA on this, I would hope that that can be done in an expeditious way. If there are other things that we are now raising as causes for concern, I think that's worrisome because we have had a process already to review this agreement and bring forward any items that we wanted Scott to consider. What's been identified at this point is this one singular area about, you know, the hold harmless section. So if there are other things that are being raised tonight, larger questions, that's separate from the issue that we're trying to address, that is, how do we resolve making sure both parties are on the same page to move this project forward?
Yeah, Marla, I don't think there's any other issues being really raised. The CEPA already addressed, and they were pretty minor things, like just making sure you have, you know, the silt barriers up to make sure that, you know, ground movement doesn't get close to the creek and some things like that. They were very minor, and they were part of the CEPA process, so I don't think that's really the issue. One of the things I will mention to, you know, technically the city owns this bike park. It is on our property, and for all purposes, the city owns the bike park. it is the city's bike park. It's not the Spoke Bike Club's bike park. They may have built the original park and they're proposing to improve the park, but it is the city's park. And so, I think RMSA will look at it that way, and they'll look at it that, you know, volunteers for the city of White Salmon are doing work there, and hopefully we can get some kind of release form, and they'll cover us, hopefully.
Well, I'd like to add to that, though, to say that he is essentially being given a really sweet bike park. And so if there's something that the city can do, whether that's, you know, yeah, I know we'll own it from a liability standpoint, but we're also, it's also, I think, a tremendous gift. And I feel like we should, if there's a way we can step up to help move this thing along, I think we should just acknowledge the fact, or if there's a contribution we can make, and if that some of that is, you know, having a rider on our insurance or something like that that covers it, to me that seems like a small price to pay for a really great addition to our community.
Agreed.
So I think I've given you a possible way to move forward at this meeting, rather than kicking it to the next meeting, would allow staff to potentially answer some of the questions that we've presented. I guess, having said that, I'll just turn it back to the chair for further action.
So if there is an action to be taken in terms of a motion, it would be to sign the modified agreement with Spoke Bike Club as agreed to tonight. I think, Ken, this is where you might want to correct my summary of the language for the motion, but it would be to agree with the conditions outlined at the council meeting regarding RMSA review and approval, or how would you recommend that motion get phrased?
And then I would also add, with the additional language suggested by Councilman Lindley,
So your microphone's really breaking up, Ken.
Okay. All right, I don't know what happened there, but it's a headset. But anyway, just the insurance review and including language, change in the language of the agreement requiring the Spoke Club to provide waivers and or release forms from all of the volunteers. That,
yes.
And I gave that language, but I can't think of it twice. It was too good the first time.
So to approve the agreement as signed, pending insurance review and addition of an agreed upon waiver release procedure for all volunteer work?
Yes, that's good.
Capture it? Okay. So on that note, is there a motion? Okay, Jason Hartman made the motion. Is there a second? Ashley Post seconded. Is there any further discussion? Okay, seeing no hands, Jan, will you take roll call for a vote?
Jason Hartman?
Aye.
David Lindley?
Aye.
Ashley Post?
Aye.
Jim Rensier?
Aye.
Joe Turkowitz?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, moving on to item 3, ratification of the participating agreement between City of White Salmon and USDA Forest Service. So this is to ratify the mayor signing the participating agreement between our city and USDA Forest Service. Bill, do you want to give background on this agreement?
Yeah, this is a grant, a contract with the scenic area. They will be doing some fuels reduction in the Catherine Creek area. They've done it for 4 or 5 years now in Burning. They've requested White Salmon Fire to be able to have a tender there, and possibly some firefighters in a brush truck, most likely just a tender. And this would be reimbursement for that. They have worked with, they also have two other fire districts, Lyle and Appleton, on contract to do this. So it wouldn't be just us. It would be shared three ways, or whatever works out on who's available. In the last couple of years, they had a real hard time getting a tender out there to help them fill porta tanks and possibly watch some line for them. So they've asked White Salmon to participate in helping this. We asked Marla to go ahead and sign the contract because the personnel at the Forest Service were afraid that this money, contract money, could possibly go away if some fire got out somewhere. And so we tried to move this forward. I've been working on this contract since probably last November, differing things back and forth. Got once again put aside because of the COVID. And they just wanted me to push forward on it a little quicker. So if anybody has any questions?
Any questions? Okay, seeing none, can we have a motion?
I'll make a motion to ratify the participating agreement between City of White Salmon, USDA Forest Service, Columbia River Gorge Scenic Area related to white salmon wildfire risk reduction and providing a grant amount not to exceed $5,000.
I'll second.
Is there a second? Jason seconded. Any further discussion? Jim.
I just didn't talk fast enough, sorry. Just to confirm that I was looking for the 5,000 that's reimbursement, but it was 9,000 that were out. Is that the max? I'm assuming that's just the max and that it's probably not going to be 9,000, or is that the expectation?
We will only be out of any cost or anything will be fuel and okay. Possibly paying a firefighter if we work that out. But no, we have no dollar expenditure in this. The money would be coming toward us. But it's kind of an odd contract the way they had to put it together, but we are dealing with the federal government, so.
Right.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, Jen, can you take a roll call vote?
Jason Hartman?
Aye.
David Lindley?
Aye.
Ashley Post?
Aye.
Jim Rensier?
Aye.
Joe Turkowitz?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you for your support.
Okay, moving on to item 4, authorization of Crestline construction payment number 5 and USDA reimbursement request number 5. Jan, would you like to give the overview?
So this is payment number 5 of the Crestline project. Jim, for your information, the council has to approve these. We're using USDA rural development monies to pay for the Jewett Street water improvements. And so this is a process we go through every month, and then we'll have somewhat of a lengthy process when we close out the process, probably when we actually close out the full loan on the project. Currently, I'm asking the city council to authorize a payment to Crestline in the amount of $347,241.53. And then the USDA reimbursement, which includes our construction engineering cost, of $374,239.36.
Okay, can we have a motion?
I'll make the motion.
Okay, Jason made the motion. Is there a second?
Second.
I'll second.
Jim will make his first second. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing no hands, Jan, will you take a roll call vote?
Jason Hartman?
Aye.
David Lindley?
Aye.
Ashley Post?
Aye.
Jim Rensier?
Aye.
Joe Turkowitz?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, on to item 5, a task order for Anderson Perry Engineering Services for the Garfield Waterline Replacement. Jan, would you like to give an overview?
Right. So, as you know, the city has funding to do improvements for Garfield Street from Jewett to Washington Street. Originally, that work was going to happen this summer. Because of COVID and some other issues and the desire to do the roundabout and that Garfield Street improvements at the same time, we delayed the road construction work until next summer, 2021. However, there is a water line that's underneath that road that needs replaced, and TIB requires any known concerns with wastewater or water lines to be fixed before we do their construction so that it isn't torn up the next year or 2 years down the road. So Anderson and Perry and Associates has a master contract with us for water engineering services. We require them to submit task orders to us for specific projects. They've submitted a task order for the engineering for this project in the amount of $9,000. That would be a not to exceed amount. And we're recommending that the city approve the task order for this project.
And we have a motion.
I'll make the motion to authorize approval of task order for Anderson Perry Water Engineering Services in an amount not to exceed $9,000 related to the replacement of a water line on Garfield Street.
Okay, Ashley made the motion. Is there a second?
Second.
David seconded. Is there any discussion?
So this is specifically for the design and management of the project. Is there any kind of estimate about the overall cost of replacing the pipe?
That's what they do when they do the engineering. They'll give us an estimate for that project.
Okay.
That's included. Providing that dollar amount's included in the $9,000. That's their job to tell us how much it's going to cost.
Any other questions?
Actually, one more thing I'm just curious about. So the repaving 141, that's been pushed out to 2023 or later. Is that right?
It's unknown.
We're unknown.
It's been pushed out indefinitely.
Indefinitely. Okay. But we would still be able to put the roundabout in next summer?
Yes.
Is that what I'm hearing? Okay.
Yes. We've decided, and we've talked to WSDOT and to TIB about that. TIB is really happy that we're combining those two components together so that the Garfield Street improvements and the roundabout improvements are seamless. They work together. And so when WSDOT comes in, their project was ending right at that roundabout. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, they'll just tie in the chip seal, or actually they're not doing chip seal, the new construction into that, you know, roadway. So it'll be designed, so it'll, you know, there'll probably be a road, you know, a seam there, but it'll look nice.
Any other questions? Okay, seeing none, Jan, can you take a vote?
Jason Hartman?
Aye.
David Lindley?
Aye.
Ashley Post?
Aye.
Jim Rensier?
Aye.
Joe Turkowitz?
Aye.
I didn't hear you, Joe.
Aye.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, moving on to item 6, the Rhine Garden Park restroom remodel small works roster bid. Jan, I think there were some updates as of today to this agenda item. So I think you can give the most current summary.
There unfortunately was an update. So I hope that you all received the email that I got. I also posted this information on the webpage. As noted last week, we received 3 bids on this project. Just as a reminder, we had originally bid this project in late June with a bid opening and review by the council at the first meeting in July. At that time, we only had 1 bid. We thought that bid was extraordinarily high compared to the engineer's estimate. And so we rejected that bid. The company that bid on that was from Walla Walla. They fully understood. I think they expected us to reject the bid. And talking to the person who did the bids, they weren't gonna be able to do that work until September anyways, which was at that time somewhat of a concern to us. So we completely rebid the project using our small works roster. We had three companies. Two of the companies spent a lot of time looking at the facility, but all three did look at it. The original contract, the original bidder in July, never looked at the facility. We had one bid that was about $20,000 less than the other two bids. I contacted Hale Construction, asked if they would stand by their bid. They explained to me that no, they had some errors in their bid. But because these bids have already been received, opened, and acknowledged, we are not able to adjust their bid. And therefore, he withdrew his bid. He was not willing to stand by the bid that he had submitted to us. And so at this time, we have two bids, which are interesting kind of bids, because if you didn't have the heating in there, MTEC would be the low bidder. But when you add the heating in, AQC Builders is the low bidder. The heating, as you can see, is a very minor portion of this building. By adding heating to the building, we'll be able to have the restrooms open in the wintertime, which I know that's been a desire for a number of the council members and a lot of the public, because, you know, definitely there are many times when, you know, our park is still used in the wintertime. And so the public would like to have access to those restrooms. So currently, our budget provides.
Sorry, Jen.
By way of clarification, on your summary, the AQC Builders, you have including sales tax after each of the totals, but you do not have it with heating on AQC. Is that, or is that not?
It does include sales tax. If you look at the new memo that I sent out today, Ken, I sent out a new memo today. And it has including sales tax.
All right.
So currently our budget provides $45,400 for the park restroom. We would need to amend that budget and add $33,683. I feel that currently our current, even with the, you know, slight dip in sales taxes, I think this is an important project. We've had a lot of complaints about these restrooms since I've been here, which is 3 years. I know the park committee and the community development committee have looked at this a couple times and really feel that some improvements need to be made there. And ideally, these improvements will also help Public Works maintenance employees keep the restroom on a clean basis. And so we are actually recommending that you authorize the mayor to sign a contract with the AQC in the amount of $79,082.63, recognizing that we will need to increase the park restroom remodel budget by $33,683.
I have another question, Mayor.
Yes, Ken.
So do we have some means to lock this facility at night in the winter?
Yes.
Just because there'd be a risk of homeless using it with the heat.
Yes. So the Benjamin restrooms are open year round. They have automatic locks on them that open them at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I think they close at 10 o'clock in the evening during the summer months. And in the wintertime, they're opened at 6 and close at 6. These electronic locks are being proposed for the new to be installed on the doors. They're not part of this bid. It's something that staff will be installing themselves. So
and
yes,
the way that works, if somebody went in at 9:30 in the evening to
camp out
for the night, they can get out. But what prevents them from just staying in there all night? And I mean, I guess I'm not sure that that would really necessarily serve its purpose.
And Mike can speak to this. You do have it happen occasionally. I know down in Benjamin, the police department occasionally does check the restrooms and make sure that they're locked and that You know, there is vandalism that occurs, but I'm not sure that it's to the level that we shouldn't have our restrooms open in the wintertime. I'm an advocate for having the restrooms open in the wintertime. Bingen's had them open in the wintertime for years, and yes, they do have some vandalism problems. You're gonna have that with any public restroom. And I think not having them open to the public, and again, in the wintertime, they close at 6 o'clock again. So like starting in October, you know, the door locks change and they're shut down at 6 p.m. So yeah, you could have somebody sneak in there at 6 p.m. and stay all night, but you know, is you know, one incident worth, you know, keeping the restrooms closed all winter time?
We'll have the code, so, I'm sure.
Do you have a comment?
We do. We have the code.
Go ahead, Mike.
I'm sure we'll have the code just like we do in Bingen. And when we start to see issues, we do nightly checks where we go in and yes, we've caught people in there sleeping. We kick them out and it's worked fine in Bingen.
Are there any warming shelters on this side of the gorge, Mike, or no. Is the closest one in Hood River?
Closest one's in Hood River.
And they're actually looking for a new place, Marla.
Are we all concerned about the energy cost to heat this? Like, is there like a design study for the heating requirements for the, given the insulation values and whatnot?
Well, they're putting some additional insulation, I think, in there. So I think it's minimal.
Like, I'm just asking, like, is there like a,
we haven't done a study.
No, just like, what is your experience in Bingen with what was in place? Was it minimal and like?
It's minimal cost to heat the building. They're really small rooms. And so it's not like you're heating, you know, a 20,000 square foot building. Right. You're heating, you know, less than 500 square feet.
Yeah. And probably minimally too. Like it's not going to be like 80 degrees in there. It's going to be 55 or whatever.
Right. Just to keep the water from freezing.
Yes,
not actually designed to be comfortable.
So Jan, I was just curious. I was looking through the list of descriptions of work, and I was also looking through the RFP that was in the July 1st agenda packet, and I didn't see any mention of the automatic locks.
As I just stated, they're not part of this contract. They will be installed by staff.
Oh, okay. Has there been any discussion about setting up a surveillance camera outside of the front doors?
No, but we could talk to Public Works about that. I don't know if they're on a, they used to have one down there on a somewhat permanent basis, but I don't know if that's still the case. I know right at the time I was left, we had started moving that camera around in different places because they didn't have enough cameras and it was a camera designed to be easily moved to different locations. And so Mike might know more about that camera, though I did see a RADCOM ticket for something about related to Bingen Park cameras recently. So
so the cameras have come a long ways even since Bingen purchased that one. And they're getting cheaper and cheaper. We do move the one around in Bingen depending on where we're having issues in Bingen. But yes, it spends a lot of time at the Bingen Park. But yeah, they have come a long ways and RADCOM could set us up fairly inexpensive.
Yep. And that's a good idea. I mean, that's one of the things that we did down in Bingen. After we had installed the locks and we were seeing some problems down there, we installed a camera down there.
Yes, Jen.
Going back to the bid, I saw that we had the automated faucets and hand dryers. Is that also true for the urinals and the toilets, or are these just normal hand flushes?
Normal hand flushes.
Have we looked into getting a water-saving urinal? You know how the ones that don't have any flush at all?
No. We're just using a standard urinal.
Okay.
Yes, David.
Yeah, I guess zooming out a little bit, I wanted to go back to the budget and the cost overrun. I guess I was just curious if given any thought to where the $33,000 might come from and how that impacts our budget.
Yeah, so let me dig through my, I printed out the budget currently. So currently we are projected to have, an ending cash balance of $483,569. That is well above the mandated ending cash balance that we're required to have via our finance policies. And so that's where the money would come out of. As some council members who have been on here a little bit longer, Jason and Ashley in particular, could tell you, is that, and Marla, is we typically will see some cost savings in the budget. The other thing to note is that we currently have budgeted in our budget $100,000 to remove the pool, the old pool. That's not gonna happen this year. That'll happen next year. And we're hoping that those costs, that $100,000, will be significantly reduced by in-kind donations from companies that have already talked to us about how they could help get that pool removed.
Okay, thank you for that perspective.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Ashley?
One thing I was wondering about is I was just wondering if perhaps we should provide a porta potty in the park near the bathroom during the remodel. That being said, I know that our public restrooms are currently closed. And I had a conversation with Marla about that yesterday. And it's kind of a gorge-wide decision about when to reopen public restrooms, but different members in the community have been discussing the need for providing that to people again, and so that's just something I was wondering about. In that particular area, we won't be able to have to offer public restrooms during the remodel, and so maybe a porta potty would be a good idea.
So to meet COVID-19 requirements, we would have to have that porta potty serviced on a fairly, probably daily basis. I have no idea what Bishop's or the company over in Hood River charge for that. I mean, that's part of the reason why the restrooms aren't open in the Gorge, is not only maybe a desire to discourage visitors, but also the COVID-19 cleaning requirements on heavily used facilities. It's different, you know, when you have an office and you can, you know, kind of garner how much your use is. But even in offices, they recommend like doing cleaning a couple times a day. And so with a facility that's used consistently, you know, I mean, that's why we've been somewhat reluctant to open the restrooms. But if we put a porta potty in, then of course we pay whoever owns that porta potty to service it so often. And I think at a minimum, and I don't know what you think about this, Marla, but I think it would have to be at least once a day.
It's definitely once a day. And I was going to speak to the bathroom specifically. As Ashley mentioned, I spoke with her about it yesterday in our updates at the end of the meeting. But I think specific to this, if the council wanted to consider having a porta potty during construction, we could look into the cost and get an estimate, but we would also need to account for the assignment of public works
to support the cleaning so we could give you guys a full picture of what that would look like for you to consider. But as of right now, there was not a consideration of adding a porta potty during the construction. We actually felt like because the restrooms have been closed currently, if we can get this project going, this actually is the ideal time to be doing it, because I think that everyone has already had to adapt, especially this summer, to a situation locally and gorge-wide of not having some of those conveniences that they are used to when traveling or being outside. But Ashley, again, if that's something that you know the council wants to move forward in consideration, certainly could.
Marla, I don't think Public Works would be servicing the porta potty. We would ask the company that owns the porta potty to service it.
Typically,
they do the servicing.
Yes, Jim.
Going back to timing, that was my thought as well about the if you start it in the fall. But I don't have a sense of, like, is this a one-year project, a three-month progress project? Like, do we have any sense of timing here? Because I think the porta potty discussion could potentially go out the window if, you know, construction goes into next spring. Fingers crossed, our situation may be different, you know, in next spring.
The contractor will be, is anxious to start once we sign a contract with them and get all of the necessary paperwork. We will issue a notice to proceed and they will begin. I expect that it will take the rest of August. This contractor spent a lot of time in all three rooms, in both bathrooms and the mechanical room, which is in the middle. So they're pretty familiar with it, but it is an older building and sometimes you find things that you wish you didn't. And so, you know, there could always be those unknown things that raise their ugly little heads. I'm hoping not. I'm hoping that they really sleuthed out all of the problems, which is why I think these bids were higher than the engineer's estimate, because I think they spent a lot of time looking at those issues. So I expect it to take all of August, and then ideally the restrooms would be available to open in September.
What time do you normally close for the winter?
Usually at the end of October, I think, Russ, is that correct?
Yes.
So we're really talking a porta potty for, I think in my head when we were first talking about this, I was thinking months of a porta potty, but we're really potentially talking about a month or 2 months at most.
That's correct.
Okay.
Any other questions? Seeing none, can we have a motion?
I'll make the motion. Go for it. I will make the motion. Hold on, I got to pull it up. I'll make the motion to authorize the mayor to sign the contract for Rangarn Park restroom remodel, and as well as look into porta potty options during the construction.
And to clarify, that would be with AQC Builders in the amount of $79,082.63, which includes sales tax and installation of heaters.
Thank you. I just for a reminder for Jim, since he's new, the motion, when it's an expenditure of funds, should include the amount of the dollars.
Perfect. Got it.
And is there a second? Jason made the second. Any further discussion? Seeing no hands, Jan, could you take the roll call vote?
Jason Hartman?
Aye.
David Lindley?
Aye.
Ashley Post?
Aye.
Jim Rensier?
Aye.
Joe Turkowitz?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, moving on to the consent agenda. Are there any items in that agenda, mainly the minutes, that any counselor wanted to pull out of the consent agenda or have any Scribner's edits? All right, looks like a typo-free copy. Then we will move forward. Can we have a motion to approve the consent agenda with the meeting minutes from July 15th, 2020, and approval of vouchers in the amount of $272,587.54.
I'll make that motion.
Okay, Jason made the motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Joe. Jan, can you take a roll call vote?
Jason Hartman?
Aye.
David Lindley?
Aye.
Ashley Post?
Aye.
Jim Rensier?
Aye.
Joe Turkowitz?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, moving on to department head and city council reports. Chief Heppner, do you have any reports for the council?
So I have been working on bills that were passed last year, new laws passed last year to go in effect throughout the year this year, which include us becoming part of an independent investigation team due to a new law with deadly force. I'm really hoping to get on with the Southwest Regional team, which is in the works of putting together their team right now. That includes Vancouver Police Department, Clark County, Skamania County, Battleground, and might even take in Camas and North Shugel. But they're in the process of building their team right now. I've been on the phone with the chief of Vancouver, who is told me today they have a meeting at the end of the month, so I'm really hoping we'll get on part of that team. Then it also includes the laws from last year that are going into effect this year, which we've already been doing because we know they're coming, is crisis intervention training. Those have been mandated for several years now, but we've been doing more hours than we're up to. Almost got everybody through the 40-hour class, and annually we have to do a 2-hour class on that. So crisis, de-escalation, and implicit bias, and all these are mandated classes that went into effect last year, but again, Washington has been pushing these for several years. And so far, I think I am down, my guys and gals are down to just the 2-hour class of crisis. Half of them have it done already. So we're looking good for all the new trainings. It makes me nervous because there's so many people getting out of law enforcement right now that every agency, I don't know about Washougal, but I know Camas, in the Gorge, including Goldendale, their chief is leaving next week. So Goldendale's going to have 2 openings. Wasco has several openings. The Dalles has a couple openings. Hood River County and the city of Hood River have openings. Skamania has openings. And Camas has openings, and all have reached out trying to steal, which scares me. Josh started the academy yesterday, and it's kind of strange. They do a lot of, like we're doing right now. So he's only at the academy a couple days a week. Then he works from home on his computer for the 40 hours a week. People are going pretty good. We're getting a few more disorderlies, things like that, with what's going on. The majority of the public in our city is great. The great majority is great. So I want you guys to know that. Other than that, do you have any questions for me? Nothing.
Chief Hunsaker, do you have any updates?
No, thank you for the grant work. I'm just working on building stuff and trying to keep the fire department moving forward, looking for more volunteers, if you know anybody that wants to join a great organization. So
what is our volunteer count right now? Active volunteers.
16. Which is very low.
And what is that breakdown of male, female?
4 females.
Okay. What would you consider a healthy volunteer count?
30 and more.
Okay. When was the last time you recall that we had a roster of 30 volunteers?
10 years ago. It's been at least 10 years. So,
okay.
Yeah, people just aren't volunteering. So I'm not sure how to motivate them to volunteer to help the city. And I'm not alone in this. This is kind of a national problem. I read in all the magazines that every volunteer organization is looking for volunteers, not just fire. The Elks, the Eagles, the specifically fire. So, mm-hmm. City council members. It's a good volunteer place. So,
yeah. Jim, do you have a question?
Yes, sorry to go backwards, but I did think one a question for Chief Heppner if he's still open to questions. When your statement on you're worried about losing people, does that mean at the moment we don't have any openings, correct? It's just that you're worried that they might be poached to another agency?
So I've been the chief coming on my 3rd year in November, and I have never had actually my full staff once trained. So yes, it makes me nervous because I have no openings right now. And Josh just started the academy. He will not get out of the academy till December. Then he'll go with 4 months as a field where we train him in the field. And so we're looking about March of next year, I'll be fully staffed. So it scares me because agencies like Camas calling down and talking to my officers makes me nervous because they pay a lot of money. And it's not all about the money. Like, I'm not leaving because I'm here because I want to be here. But I have 3 young people.
And Mike, isn't it correct? They don't make a move, do they?
No, they do not. They can live here. Okay. All the agency I listed, they can live here or wherever they're living.
What agencies in our region require officers to live in their community? Do you know? In that region one?
No, because that's the idea of you don't really want to live right in the city you work because people figure out exactly where you live. And they show up at your house. So it's good to have your officers there for backup when you need them, but people tend to just come to your door. And people with families, I totally get, with young children, right, want to get out.
Yeah, Pedro learned that really quick when he
yes,
bought
he did.
A place in Bingen, and then
yes,
quickly
he did.
Moved.
Jim, did you have a question? Sorry.
No, you're good. I was just going to say then, so knowing that for essentially during your entire tenure, we've struggled to keep people within the role. And this is probably as much a staff and mayor discussion as a council one, but it seems like then when would it not, I know the current political climate is not to add funding to police, but also if we don't want zero police on the streets either. So like, is that something that we look at each year in budgeting when we look at what we pay our officers and, or are there ways to relieve work off of officers? You know, I saw the tick sheet and saw, you know, there's certain calls that obviously are more assist situations than obviously doing, you know, having to do something. is there any way to provide relief in a way that, and maybe right now, actually, I'm kind of, I feel like maybe I'm jinxing it, but just by saying it out loud, because you are, you've got what you need at the moment. Yeah, I don't know if there's, a question there other than, you know, I guess let us know.
I think we are the only agency, and I could speak to that. Yeah, go ahead.
We are the only agency that has one person on at a time. Our backup is the county, and let's just say that we handle a little bit of their calls close by the city because they need to be down here a little more often, in my opinion.
Yeah, I got it.
The city's one that pays us. You guys pay our wages. And so I expect my guys to be there within a couple minutes, and not right now because of COVID, but face one-on-one conversations with people because we're here for the community. But thanks, Jim.
And Jim, I think to answer some of your other question, which is a very good one, and you know, to give you kind of an idea, especially some of the conversation I mentioned earlier regarding budget, you are right that this is an area that, like many, the council, this is where you can set policy and the approach that we want to take in these different areas. And I will say that for 3 years, Chief Heppner has led and been very vocal on a need in our community to shift gears in how we approach, especially mental health. And so I think that's an area that's a good example of, by the time the officers call, there's probably been a larger policy failure, because a mental health call isn't always necessarily a police matter. And so some of this, I think, is the work of the council in terms of looking at funds. And we have been taking an approach in recent years of trying to be out in front of grant opportunities. And the chief has definitely led on that. But I think if this is an area that is of importance, there should probably come a point where we consider, is there city funds that we want to put behind some of these efforts? But those are areas in the funding that certainly the council can guide direction on. How do we see public safety in our community, and what are issues that we see as policing issues, and what are issues that are more community-led or community engagement issues? So that is some of the area where it splits. Ken can probably speak more fully in terms of your salary question, but a lot of that is tied to our collective bargaining agreements. And so that's not necessarily just a carte blanche decision that can be made by the council to change what is a agreed upon salary structure or range. But when those agreements are up for review, that is a period where we are then in negotiation.
Great. Thanks. Didn't mean to derail it, but thanks.
No, I think that's a good question, and nice to have a new counselor that can lead some of those questions so that all of us get a refresher. Jan, did you have any updates?
Yeah, we will need to have a budget committee meeting fairly soon. I do need to get caught up first. Hopefully I will be able to have stuff done and out to the budget committee. I'm hoping by the end of the week. We've pushed back a little bit on our public records request due to people being on vacation. So that'll free up a little bit of my time. And so I think by Friday, I'll have a suggestion, some suggested times for David and Jason. Scott Clements is our public representative on the budget committee. So we'll try to find a time when we can set up a Zoom meeting, get all the documents out. I'll probably have some minor recommendations for budget amendments based on things that we've approved, including, you know, our COVID-19 funding. That we need to spend. Currently, that funding is due to be spent by October 31st. There has been some investigation, I think, at the governor and the Department of Commerce's level, and maybe at the federal level, to extend that funding window to December 31st. But I haven't, there was a survey done, and so I haven't really heard if that's going to happen. Most cities there's a number of cities that haven't spent all the money, but have said that we will spend it, and we will get it spent by October 31st, but that it would be helpful to be able to spend that money, have a longer time period. So also I'll be putting out a call to department heads for their budgets. We'll start out with the base budgets, and then I'll ask for a separate document that is add-ons, and then narratives as to what those add-ons are and why they're necessary. Just as a reminder, there are a couple things that are pretty standard. We always buy a new police vehicle. We fund that out of general fund, and that just keeps those high mileage vehicles replaced and in service as they need to be. I know we just spent quite a bit of money on one police vehicle recently, I think, Mike, right? And then I've been working with Bill. The fire department has a desire or the need to purchase a new truck here in the near future. So we've been moving. I moved $75,000 over this year, and I hope to be able to move that amount over next year and maybe bump that up to about $80,000. I think it will be helpful at the budget committee to understand our funding structure and the restrictions on that. As you guys know, I started a budget narrative document last year, and I want to expand on that. And I know that in the staff meeting, we had some discussions about how to convey messages about our budget and what we spend it on. I think that will be helpful to the budget because it's very easy to look at our different funds that have high level balances and think, oh, there's lots of money to spend on parks or housing or all of these other things, when in reality, there are restrictions on a big majority of that money. And so I think conveying that message, having council members understand that, what those restrictions are is important because, you know, a general citizen could easily look at our, you know, $10, $11 million budget and ask why we aren't building housing or why we don't have a whatever department or, you know, a full-blown parks and recreation department. And there's lots of reasons why. And so I think getting that messaging, updating that narrative and getting it more expanded this year will be critical. So staff is continuing to work at home. We won't be able to open the office until we enter phase three. I don't anticipate that happening anytime soon. The governor just stated that it is his desire that schools not reopen this fall. They have set that up on a county by county basis grid line, but it sounds like most schools are not reopening at this time, pretty much statewide. And so I imagine that's going to be the same with public offices. However, if we do reach phase three, I had come up with a plan to reopen the office to the public so people could come and, you know, it's going to be one person at a time in the lobby with spacing outside waiting, but people would be able to get their blue recycling bags here at City Hall. We do continue to be at the park. We've signed up quite a few people for use of the pool. We're giving out free masks. Again, I talked with Marla recently. I'm going to be contacting some of our key businesses, such as the Harvest Market, all of our restaurants, and seeing if they would be open to having baskets of these free bags available so that people can just pick up these bags and our face masks and get them used. Most people at the park were taking them. I was glad to see that. I see a lot of people using disposable face masks, which is, as you know, is going into our waste stream. And they also get thrown on the ground or, you know, because people don't get them in the garbage or whatever. So hopefully we can get these face masks out and get them used. And then as Marla said, staff will be looking at options related to using the rest of the money. We will be covering the purchase of two laptops. We purchased one already. We're going to put Katie Cross back to work. We're going to get her a laptop and have her start working. She's been at home on COVID-19 funding and taking care of her newborn baby. But I think she's ready to go back to work. So we'll get a laptop, because originally we didn't think we were going to be here this long. I think we thought we'd be in the state for a couple of months and we'd all be back in the office. But obviously that's not the case.
Thanks, Jan. Russ, do you have any updates?
Yeah, the water main project's going good. They tested their main from Estes down to 7th Street. It passed. They've started doing services tieovers on that main. I imagine they're going to start doing the other Main Street tieovers also probably next week. And then they'll pressure test this, the last part down to the hospital probably within next week, I think. So, and we should have our part for our asphalt saw in tomorrow, so we'll start doing potholes again.
That will make many residents happy. Thank you. Ken, do you have any updates?
I got nothing for you.
All right, counselors, Ashley.
This is something really small. Just with the bathrooms, I was wondering if we could put it in the budget to do a yearly repainting of the inside of the bathroom, just like they do in Bingen. And then the only other thing, I had a question for Ken. I was wondering if could you just review the Open Meetings Act when it comes to emails between city councilors. I'm just thinking as we're coming up with ideas for our discussion about how to use the CARES Act funding, if it's appropriate for us to forward things that we're seeing other cities doing or ideas we come across to the rest of the city councilors, as long as we don't reply all.
Yeah, my preference is you put those things through staff, and then the staff can communicate to the rest of the counselors. There's just a certain inherent danger in council members providing comments or materials directly to the other council members. It does run the risk of a serial meeting. So it's best you can send it directly to Jan, and then Jan can circulate it to the other council members. That's a better way to do it, but you know, as long as you're, and if you're communicating with other council members, say on a committee, if it's less than a quorum, you can do that. Just don't bring another council member into the communication, and make sure it's less than a quorum. But that said, my preference is always to have communications council member to council member run through staff, because then it's controlled by a central clearinghouse, that you'll not run into that risk of a reply all problem.
Okay, thanks, Ken. My thinking was just that if any of us are coming across some good ideas, that might be a helpful method, sending it through Jan.
Yes.
Just to give us some time to really think it through prior to our meeting.
Right.
And I don't mean to be a stickler to make communication more difficult between council members, because it's very important that if one council member has a good idea or some sort of information to share with the other council members, that's not prohibited. That is not prohibited. And in fact, that's part of the democratic process, to allow everybody to have all the information they can and deliberate on it. But there's a way to do it without running into a problem with the OPMA. And the best way to do that, again, is just have everything run through Jan. She'll send it out to the other council members. And then if they reply back to Jan, she knows what to do with it.
And make sure you let me know that you want it to go out to all the council members, because I know sometimes council members just send stuff to a specific staff person, just because they're working on something. So make sure you let me know that you want it sent out to everybody.
Then the other advantage to doing it that way is then we make sure if there's a records request that the city has a copy of that communication to be able to respond to that records request. If it's just on your, you're hopefully all using city email. Jim, did you get a city email address? Yeah. So if you're all properly using your city emails, we do have a way to search all those. But just as a matter of convenience, if it's all run through JAM, it's a lot easier to search those emails and figure out what's gone to whom.
Thank you. Jason, any update?
Nope, nothing for me. Just glad to have Jim on board. Thanks for stepping up, Jim.
Thanks.
Joe, any update?
Nope, nothing for me. And again, welcome, Jim. Thank you.
Thanks.
David.
No updates this time.
Okay, Jim, first update. No pressure if there's no update.
No updates. Thank you.
Okay. I gave pretty much main overviews earlier. I think a couple other points that came up are just to elaborate. As Ashley mentioned, restrooms, you might have had people ask you this question, and Jan talked about it briefly earlier, but the decision to close the restrooms initially, and I think we mentioned this at a June meeting, was going to change as we entered into phase three. We were going to start accounting for the maintenance of and reopening of the restrooms down at the chamber, since that is on a main thoroughfare, and they are city restrooms. Obviously now we're staying in phase two for prolonged periods. Some of that decision was part of a gorge-wide arrangement, which is an ongoing coalition between U.S. Forest Service, state parks in both Oregon and Washington, county commissioners from Multnomah over to Wasco, and obviously city officials throughout all of those counties. And specific to restrooms, it's an interesting, tricky spot in that decisions that all those agencies have been made, and a lot of it is about the sanitation and cleaning, that kept those restrooms closed. And so now there's been a concern previously that if one entity were to open their restrooms, do they risk being overwhelmed? And of course, in cities, we had concerns about our businesses seeing their restrooms overwhelmed, or a city like ours where we would have only one public restroom, would that see an uptick in traffic? Full disclosure, I was not on the last bi-weekly meeting. Our next one is this Friday, and I will be participating, so I will see if there have been updates on the conversation of restrooms, because this is an area that, again, we thought at this point in the summer we would have them open down at the chamber, and I do think there's been more questions or discussion about it. But some of that decision for this entire period, and I expect going forward, is part of trying to work with these other entities and make sure that gorge-wide we're supporting all of the different cities, counties, and facilities to make sure that we're in unison. I think Jan might have mentioned committees earlier, especially the budget committee. We do have some committee appointments that have not been made. We've had some citizen interest in some of those, so I do expect that in future meetings we will have some of those committee appointments finally made from public for the public seats. Again, a lot of the committees, we're still trying to get them moving, but just on issues that are more timely or of critical importance. So I would expect that we'll have an update there at a meeting in the very near future. And some of those committees might also start having additional meetings. I mentioned the County CARES funding that's specific to rental or mortgage assistance and utility payments. That was discussed at the commissioner meeting this last Tuesday. I did relay to the commissioners some of the points of emphasis that I think matter for White Salmon. A lot of that is having appropriate proportional representation. And what I mean by that is the amount of money that every county gets is based on population at our cities and then countywide. So in the picture of funding for Klickitat County, we make up roughly 18% of those funds. So I do think it's important to make sure that at least that amount is coming back to our residents. That again is some money that is kind of flagged with that time sensitive stamp. And so this is a process that I think will move forward quickly at the county level, but part of that process is a public hearing. So I think that that information will become available hopefully in the near future, and that process keeps moving. Other updates, like I mentioned earlier, obviously I missed the last two council meetings, but I am back more fully.
So if you have things that you've been holding off on reaching out to me about, feel free to connect with me either email or phone. I'm around. I just might have a crying baby at times. But I think that's it on my end. And I don't think we need an executive session tonight, but I will defer to Ken to confirm. Okay,
no,
I see a
no, we
muted
don't need anything.
Mouth. No.
Yeah,
all right.
Sorry about
There's
that.
The yeah. Audible no. one. So hearing no other business, we will call this meeting adjourned at 7:46. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Everybody.
Good night.
Thank you. Night all.